7 minutes past 6, hello, welcome along to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That is Red Energy and Kia's open season on now with match-winning deals. You can ring us anytime on the Harcourt's open line, 13 13 32. You might want to give us your report on day one of the fourth test up at the Gabba. Shortly we're going to be talking to the godfather of Victorian cricket, who's going to give us his report, and we've got something for him as well. Jimmy, welcome to you. You went political last night, and I see Alan Joyce has jumped on board your wagon with the double standards and the hypocrisy.
Yeah, look, I was just referencing how people would probably feel with Tennis Sangren coming in. I have no issue with everything else if he's been all cleared, but like you said, it's been a pretty tough year for all Victorians, and this would be rubbing some up the wrong way, but if I'm on board with Alan Joyce, does that get you and I, an upgrade next time we have to cover the footy?
Possibly, but we'll be just happy if we're flying anywhere. 13 13 32 is a Harcourt's open line. Give us a call any time. Jimmy, give us your thoughts on what's happening up at the Gabba before the Godfather joins us.
I think it's been a pretty even day. A couple of wickets for India to set batsmen in Wade, who was on 45, and Labuschagne on 108. Look, they were rolling along again, the Aussies. And now you've got Green, who looks good. Payne looks settled, but one wicket and we're into the tail again.
Slow start, though. 2 for 17 with Warner making just one, continuing his row of outs. Have to question that selection still for mine. Harris, Marcus Harris, 5. Labuschagne out for 108. Smith, 36. Wade, 45. Green and Payne at the crease as we speak. Sean Graff is the most influential man in cricket in this state. He joins us on the line. Welcome to you, Graffy, and happy 2021, hopefully.
Yes, Jared, Jimmy. Hopefully we have a better year, but it's been fairly challenging. But it's an interesting day up at the Gabba. I think it's been a great day of cricket, and the Gabba wicket tends to provide that. So,
give us your thoughts on where the match sits.
Well, I think I agree with Jimmy that it's definitely in the balance. If India pick up a couple here now with this new ball, and all of a sudden they're right back in the game. The beauty about a game where it sits at the moment, similarly to in Sydney, is that people say, oh, we haven't batted very well in Sydney, for example, we've got 330 or whatever on the first day. But the fact of the matter, that opens the game up, it means that there's a contest on. And I think in this situation at the Gabba, where traditionally Australia's played very well, with the Gabba bounce, I think if we get 330, 350, whatever, maybe more, but I wouldn't go. I don't like them when they bat too deep, because I think you've got to always keep the other side to have a sniff, to have a win, so they keep going for it. And, we didn't get it in Sydney. India played superbly to get that draw, but the game was opened up early, and I think that's what I like about it, and I can see this being similar.
Glad you raised that, Graffy. We were talking about it off-air, that great test matches have the side batting first not score 400. If they score 400, it's really they can't lose and we're only playing for a draw. So 300 to 320 makes a great test match.
Yeah, it does. And I think one of the things that it's important is that you've got to keep it alive, and so that everyone, both teams have got to sniff all the way through. And I agree, if you go 400, I see it often in Shield cricket where teams go and bat on and on and on, and they bat deep into the second day, and they've got 500. The game's snuffed out. And this, the beauty about losing early wickets and making it a contest between bat and ball, and the Gabba wicket does that. And I think all the wickets this year for Test cricket have been good because they've been able to provide decks that have given a bit for both, and it means the game's alive deep into the actual fourth day or fifth day. So that's important.
Looks like they've found themselves a new bowler, though. India, Natarajan has picked up a couple of wickets, a couple of big-name players falling to his deliveries. He looks like he's got a career ahead of him.
Yeah, look, I think the young attack's been excellent. They've been disciplined. The spinner, like, to get Smith out first up's pretty handy. They're aggressive. They certainly look at home in that environment. And no doubt they've been on a long tour. They've been in a hub. They've been in quarantine. They'd be itching to play. And so it's clearly shown that they've got great depth. And, we can't relax at all. Even though we might not be playing their best side, they've got great depth. And it's clearly shown that we're going to have to play at our best to be able to maybe get a result in our way.
So then, Graffy, does that make it even sort of harder for Matthew Wade? When you add up the tests played by the 5 bowlers for India, it's 4 tests combined. Compare that to Australia, it's 250 nearly. Matthew Wade missed a big, big opportunity to sort of cement his spot for upcoming tours.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that, Jimmy. I just think this was the opportunity for him to actually really get a big one. Like, he started off his test career so well with, you know, he had a couple of hundreds in his first 12 innings or whatever, and he's thrown this. He's got a lot of good scores. Like, he was the sacrificial lamb to go and open earlier, you know, in these couple of early tests, and he did well without capitalising on having a start. And this was the opportunity for him on a great deck up there at the Gabba to be able to, you know, really get a big score. And I think he's left the door ajar now. That, you know, he's getting on a little bit. You know, a young player, Kupakoski, hopefully will be right. He can bat in any position on that first six. And all of a sudden, you've got Green sitting there as well. So he's left the door ajar, no doubt. And he'd be kicking himself that he hasn't gone on with it today.
Can you tell us the latest on Pekowski, given he's had a subluxation of that shoulder?
Look, I'm not in the inner sanctum, Jared, as you know, but...
Come on, Graffy, you are the inner sanctum.
No, not in the Australian team. But they would certainly take the careful approach. Look, the old schoolers, we all know, you know, all you guys who play footy and everything, you possibly would have had a jab and maybe said, yeah, I'm okay, I'm fine, I'll keep going. But in today's modern game, it's not the way they do it. They certainly tell the truth to the physios and the coaches, which is something maybe we didn't do. But look, that's fair enough. He's starting his career. The last thing he wants to do is say he's right and when he's not, and all of a sudden he could cost him a run out or whatever because he can't throw. So I can understand it. But hopefully it's only just a short-term injury and he's going to be ready for South Africa when that tour hopefully goes ahead.
Payne and Green are still at the crease. They've both played and missed a number of times. I think they're trying to get themselves out before Stumps, which isn't that far away. But just watching Green, clearly he's a huge talent. And I was having a look at his bat. Now, you're a pretty tall bloke, Graffy, but this guy is in another land, if you like. Do you have actually extra long bats or extra long handles? Is that sort of part and parcel of cricket these days?
Yeah, well, you could get an extra long handle. The actual blade itself will always be the same, but the handle, you can actually have a long handle, which a lot of the... You know, Clive Lloyd used to have a long handle. The taller blokes did that. But I see what you see with Green. Like, he's more or less bent right over the top of the bat, and it looks like a little dimple. It looks like a bloody... just something that... A little axe, so to speak. But, look, he's got some talent. Well, I watched him early days... when he first started for Western Australia over the Wacker, and James Pattinson was a young quick as well, but had decent pace. And Green, he hooked him a couple of times out in the middle, and I thought, geez, this kid's good. He's only 17. Pato was only young, but he was quick, and he'd been around for a little bit. And I thought, oh, he's got some metal about him, and his pace. He still hasn't got that wicket yet, but I think if he just bowls a little bit fuller length, he's got he's certainly got the attributes to be able to be a really handy first change, maybe in Test cricket down the track, and that's what Australia needs, is a batting all-rounder who can hold his own with the ball or with the bat in the top six as well. So
your man Natarajan is bowling right now, Jimmy, and both batsmen are desperate to get out at the moment.
He's hooping him around and moving him off the seam a little bit. Now, Graffy, you know the man Jared Healy. He's a power broker, but not only in footy circles, he's just stretching his wings to cricket. He's done some good work for you this week. He's been on the recruiting drive. He might have found you someone.
Right, okay, fair enough. What, down at Bell Beach or somewhere?
No, for your BBL franchises, which just need a little bit of a lift.
I think, Graffy, you've been actually hiding under the bed, as Hooksy used to say, because it's the first time we've ever had you on the radio when the Renegades and the Stars are holding up the ladder. Now, look, we go back a long way, and when you're in trouble, I try to come through with some sort of assistance for you. And in doing so, we have uncovered a real talent. Telukaratna Dilshan lives in Victoria. He lives over in the Dandenongs, and he was BOG with a 50 last week, knocking off Dandenong. Now, I put it to him, because I know you didn't want to go public with it, I put this to him, and I'll get your response shortly. Well, what about if Sean Graff gave you a call, the master of ceremonies here in Victoria for cricket? If Sean Graff gave you a ring and said, Telukaratna, we need your experience at the Renegades, would you be prepared to play at the next level?
100%, I think I can play at that level. That's now is I can start here. Might be I can next year. Might be I can play. Yep. If they happy to play next year, I think they are. I know they are playing a little bit not good at the moment. They are big bash not doing well. But if I can help them, it's my experience. If you call it, definitely I grab that opportunity and go and play. Yes.
Understatement saying the Renegades aren't doing well, Graffy. You know where all this finishes.
Well, look, I'm not certain on his, the fact that he's mostly going out with a walking stick at this stage, but the fact of the matter is, can he catch? That's the key.
He can catch and he can bat. He can also bowl. I mean, he's one of the legends of the sport, and he's in your backyard. I'll expect a phone call to him this week.
Look, he's been a fine player, no doubt about it, and it's great that he's playing at South Melbourne, or Casey South Melbourne, so that's... That's a bonus for the competition. But, look, at this stage, I'd say Michael Klinger and Andrew Lynch, who looks after the list, they'll be looking at maybe elsewhere at this point in time, though. I'll pass on the message.
Okay, do that. And if in fact, you don't ring him and the results don't improve, well, we'll be... You know what happens, Graffy. We've got to get a scalp from somewhere, and you may be the bloke you go for.
I'd rather go to Jimmy, mate. He had the bloody... he was in the under 17s. He was a gun and underage. Yeah, we might be able to get him out there again.
I like that idea.
Yeah, I don't mind it either. Just, but you did go to the Premier, the Victorian Premier League. There's a couple of young fellas that are going to get their opportunity because they've been bashing some runs there, and with the Stars and Renegades not going so great, it's opened up an opportunity for two guys.
Yeah, look, Seymour, who plays at Essendon, has now gone on the list at the Stars, and hopefully he plays a couple of games and gets a feel for it and see whether or not how he stacks up. He's had a great year, or a great couple of years in actual fact, and he's been a strong competitor in a few different states. He was forced early on this year to go to New South Wales when we had the COVID and we weren't playing, and he went up to Sydney and he played great cricket and got 100 early in September, October, I think. And Stepien's playing Braden Stepien's from Carlton, who's a real good talent as well. Both of them have been good, and it really does open up an opportunity, even though I think the Stars, with their main men back in, I think will still challenge for a spot in the finals. Hopefully tonight they get away with it and get a win, but... The Renegades, they've got a young side, and there's been a lot of, no doubt there's a lot of excuses, but in the end, bad cricket's bad cricket, and unfortunately they haven't played as well as what they should have.
No, just a rebuilding year there, Graffy. We can't wait for the Shield to get back underway so we can get some wins at the Sean Graff High Performance Centre. Great to have you on board again, mate, and have a great weekend.
Thanks,
Jerry. Sean Graff, the godfather of Victorian cricket, and cricket is our... APCO Hot Topic. Follow Australians. You can choose the red and blue. A for APCO, APCO Service Stations. We've got you covered. Look for the trusted Australian-made logo. To be sure, it's authentically Australian-made. Indian cricket broadcaster Shetan Narula. He's up next. Time now to go round the grounds for Tommy Ruffs, where the Moroccan Barramundi is just flying off the fry pans as we speak. Jimmy, give us a score from the Gabba.
5 for 259 with a couple of overs left in the game, with Payne on 31 and Green on 20.
You're listening to Sports Day, where it's Kia's open season on now with match-winning deals and Red Energy. And we can now go to the equivalent, say, in Australia, maybe Mark Howard, on his way to becoming a Richie Beno type. Shetan Narula is an Indian cricket broadcaster. He joins us on the line to give us the counter view. Welcome to you, Shetan, and where do we find you?
Oh, I'm in Delhi right now and watching the game. Yeah, 262 for 5, end of the day's play, almost approaching us. And India have done well to pull things back, haven't they?
We think you got off to a great start, probably lost your way a little bit. I reckon it's probably squared up, but given the side that you've come in with, it's a very positive start.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, who would think this sort of a bowling attack? It's almost like a T20 side. It's not, you take out Pujara and Rahane, of course, from the T20 side, but it's almost like these players, they're more adept to playing white ball cricket than red ball cricket. And I'm talking about the bowling attack, of course. But yeah, they have done well. Manus Labuschagne keeping Australia ahead. But I think those two wickets from Natarajan have done good damage to the Australian hopes of putting up 500 on the board, maybe 300, 350 now.
So what was the feeling like back in India when you've got a bowling attack which are combined of four test matches, and I think the third one, three of them would have gone to Siraj? Was there confidence after the fantastic draw in Sydney and the fantastic win in Melbourne that anything is possible?
It's a tricky one, to be honest, because, I mean, you look at Melbourne and you look at Sydney. I mean, the bowling attack for India there was fantastic, even if it was not at full strength. You had Bumrah, you had Ashwin, Siraj is doing well. But without those two, I mean, like you said, it's just four test matches between all of these guys. And of course, Staini has now gone off injured. Most of these bowlers have white ball experience. So there aren't too many hopes as such in terms of the result of the series, the result of this test match. But again, it's not a foregone conclusion because what we have seen in the series that the Indian team has fought tooth and nail. They've fought for every delivery, every run, every wicket. And I think that is what is on display again today because, you know, for 2.5 sessions, it looked like Labuschagne was running away with the day and then Natarajan comes back and he's not afraid to bounce set batsmen and he gets those two wickets of short delivery. So, like I said, they are fighting. They're fighting hard and the batting is at full strength. If not full strength, okay, not Virat Kohli is not there, so almost full strength. So yeah, it'll depend on how India bat in the two innings as per the result of this particular test match.
Chetan, you highlighted Saini's injury. Now, if this was in Australia and we lost six bowlers in 3.5 test matches, there'd be an uproar. They'd be asking for a review of strength and conditioning and fitness and what's going on with plans and preparation. What's the feedback in India about, again, another bowler looks to be hurt?
Well, that's an excellent point. And the issue here is that these players have been in bubbles. They have been in bio bubbles for 6 months. And there is a school of thought that it's starting to take a toll. You know, because these are athletes. They're not like regular people that, you know, people like me or anybody else who's just sitting on a desk all day. We are working, we're watching television. No, these are athletes. They have to go to the pool, they have to go to the gym, they are active, they go for practice sessions and everything. And while they have been doing all that, even then we are restricting their movements in bio bubbles. I think it's more to do with that than anything else. And some of the injuries, let's be honest, some of the injuries have also been inflicted during the game. For example, you look at Mohammad Shami. He was hit on his arm and that's why he was not able to take further part. Similarly for Ravindra Jadeja, he was hit on his thumb and that's why he's out. So you can't really do anything about those injuries, but some of the other injuries like the groin and the calf, well, the back, yes, they are a bit worrisome, but right now all India need to think about is how to get over this test match and then the England series, which is going to be really important in terms of qualifying for the World Test Championship. We're hoping we'll have some bowlers to play during that series.
Rishabh Pant's fascinating for me. He absolutely smoked 100 in the warm-up game and then didn't play the first test. Now he's played an unbelievable innings at the SCG. Is it now time he's just the full-time keeper? There's none of this who the best gloveman is. You just take the good with the bad with Pant?
Well, it's again a tricky question because Pant is not really a good wicketkeeper, is he? I mean, he's dropped a catch today as well. He's dropped a few catches in the...
He averages one drop catch a test.
Yeah, he averages one drop catch a test. So if you score, 80 and 90 runs, but if the batsman you drop goes on and scores 100 and 150, puts his team in front, that almost balances it out. So look, test matches are all about taking those 20 wickets. You can't have a wicketkeeper dropping catches. You can't really be dropping any catches, to be honest. And India's fielding has been really bad in that sense. But having said that, it's an interesting debate because, you know, there are a few options available to Indian cricket. There's KS Bharat, there's Ishan Kishan, youngsters who are very good keepers and batsmen. Ishan Kishan is almost like Rishabh Pant in the sense that probably a better keeper, but he's almost as good as with the bat in hand. I think there's a school of thought that says maybe play Pant as a specialist batsman and get in another keeper. I think we might see that play out in the home series. But again, there are lots of ifs and buts because Saha is an excellent wicketkeeper, although he's not as good with the bat. So really tricky. And, you know, these are the sort of questions when you don't want to be the captain or coach.
I tell you what, as a commentator, Chetan, I reckon you'd love to have Ishan Kishan come in. You could do a hell of a lot with that as a commentator.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
Ishan Kishan's gone missing. Ishan Kishan's gone fishing. Ishan Kishan, he's gone kissing. I mean, there's a hell of a there's a hell of a lot you could do with that. I get the feeling listening to those Indian commentators that I've heard in the last week or so that you're actually probably more proud of the fact that you've fought hard than any other element of this particular series against Australia. It's the fight that you're actually proud of, and it seems to have cut a major swathe through every commentator's psyche.
Oh, absolutely. I think you just look at the way the situation has developed from the very first test, or from the moment India has landed over there. Virat Kohli not playing majority of the test series. A lot of Australian ex-cricketers, don't mind me saying that, a lot of Australian ex-cricketers said that without Virat Kohli, it's a no-brainer, really. Australia are going to win the series. And especially after that 36 all-out. I mean, that dents to your psyche, doesn't it? I mean, 36 all-out. Who gets all-out for 36? Even colony teams or gully cricket teams don't get out for 36. The issue here is that, again, it's a mental battle, not just in terms of what the ex-cricketers are saying, because most of the cricketers block that out, but it's also about fighting your own inner demons. The team coming together, nobody giving them a chance after Virat Kohli, you know, went away on leave. And of course, you had a 36 all-out. Then, of course, there have been some issues. Again, don't mind me saying this, but there have been some off-field issues with the sledging, with some of the perpetrated racial abuse, or in, you know, the question mark of whether we are going to play at the Gabba or not, with the Queensland government imposing a bio bubble. So all of these, you know, these become factors. Let's just say that they become factors to spurring a team on, and nobody is really great at spurring a team on than Ravi Shastri. And this Indian team, this fighting image of the Indian team, is actually Ravi Shastri, because he's a born fighter. He's fought his way on the field. He takes a stand with the commentary mic in his hand. As a coach, he shoots from the hip. So this is sometimes it's said that, you know, a captain's image is reflected on his team. I think this is the coach's imprint on the Indian team.
Can I ask you about Virat Kohli? He's my favourite cricketer in the world right now, but it does appear as if the success in the second test under Rahane, or in the third test, I should say, under Rahane, and stumps have been drawn as we speak. No change to that particular score with the wickets, that is. It's 5 for 274, Payne 38, Green 28. But has Virat Kohli, has he lost some skin on the knee over the last 2 weeks or so, given how well you've done under Rahane?
Well, it's an evolving debate, really, about captaincy. And even yesterday, I was recording a couple of podcasts, and the captaincy issue came up again. It's not just about Rahane, is it? It's also about Rohit Sharma in white ball cricket. So there's an underlying tone or underlying debate about captaincy, which is not really going away. Knowing Virat Kohli, it'll be a bit irksome for him, because he likes, you know, he likes to be the center of attention. He is that sort of a player. The issue here is, forget white ball cricket. In red ball cricket, India haven't done badly under him, have they? They've gone and they've won overseas test matches. They won in Australia in 2018. They have been the world number one side for a while. And when he started as test captain, India were number 7 in the test rankings. So he's done well in that sense. However, I think it's time to question whether India can do better. You know, can they go the extra mile if we have a different captain? For my mind, I covered the South Africa tour, the England tour, and the Australia tour. And India should have won in South Africa, if not in England. They should have won a test series in South Africa in 2018. They did not do that because there were some captaincy blunders. Similarly, the same thing happened in England as well. So maybe a different captain who's a bit calmer, maybe. It's just a very big maybe. To my mind, Indian cricket is not ready for a healthy captaincy debate at the moment. That's where we stand at the moment.
It's very interesting. I won't name this person, but legend of Australian sport in AFL football. And I asked him about a team that went from power broker to down the bottom of the ladder, split the club open many years ago. And he said, I asked him why it happened. And he said, well, It happens in a lot of teams that are dominant. It all comes about because there's a fight over who gets the credit. And I just wonder whether or not this has the potential to split Indian cricket. Ravi Shastri's at the top. You've got Rahane. You've got Virat Kohli. You've got all sorts of people looking for credit rather than just all enjoying your successes that you've seen. And I know that, you know, in team sports, there's always a few downs amongst the successes, but not a time, in my view, to be undermining Virat Kohli and others looking for a little piece of the credit as to why things are going well.
No, I don't think that's going to happen in Indian cricket, to be very honest, because one thing that, you know, what we discuss and everything that's all on the outside, because one thing that is for certain is that the dressing room, the sanctity of the dressing room is paramount. Mm-hmm. Ravi Shastri is not going to come out and undermine Virat Kohli. Ajinkya Rahane is not going to do that. Rohit Sharma is not going to do that. Virat Kohli is not going to do that.
Good.
So
yep.
whether it's a random guy speaking to you on the phone or some guy writing a newspaper column, it does not matter. The sanctity of the dressing room, if there is, you know, apart from the fighting thing, this is something that I have witnessed over the last 12 years of covering cricket, and it has started from the time of MS Dhoni. The sanctity of the Indian dressing room is paramount. And the debates, well, it's all about the media, right? We like these debates. Mm. We like these discussions. But it is not going to split that Indian team apart. No way.
Chetan, it's been fantastic to have a chat to you. You are brilliant to talk to, and we'd love to have a regular chat if we can. Good luck for the rest of this test and taking on England as an Indian broadcaster.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I think you're allowed to use the royal we.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Chetan Narula, I told you he had great potential. I've listened to him over in India broadcasting, and he is a class act, like most things in and around Indian cricket. This is Sports Day. Plenty more ahead for McDonald's. 7 new flavours of frozen Coke at Macca's are now available. Get in and get yourself slurping. Welcome back to Sports Day, where it's Kia's open season. It's on now with match-winning deals and Red Energy. Jimmy, we were talking about Kane Richardson before we came on air. You're a huge rap for him. Thinks he should be back playing for Australia before too long. Here's your chance to go head-to-head with Kane Richardson.
Looking forward to it. And as we've spoken about, the Renegades and Stars on the bottom of the ladder there, but not because of this man. Kane, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Not too bad. Another tough loss last night. Yeah, you had the heat right there for the taking, but just couldn't get it done.
Yeah, it's I walked off pretty disappointed last night. I think out of all the losses we've had this year, I reckon that one stung a little bit because it felt like we should have won that game. So there's been games where we've been, you know, blown away with the bat, and you know it's like in footy when you lose by 10 goals, but when you lose after the siren or a game you feel like you should have won, they sting the most. So yeah, we're in the game, which is a positive, but unfortunately again we couldn't quite get it done. So we'll lick our wounds and come again Sunday.
Your own form, I think, has been fantastic. 1 for 29, but you had a couple nicked between, you know, the catching man and the keeper, the go for four, which just really gets a fast bowler nice and happy when they go in between slip and keeper in a T20. But yeah, you're absolutely hooping the ball around again.
Yeah, it's been nice to get an opportunity earlier in the innings to bowl. I think at the start of the season, I didn't really get that opportunity through a different bowling lineup. So I think at the moment it's been nice to have a crack a bit earlier, and to see the ball swing as well is always nice. But yeah, as you said last night, it was one of those nights, not just for me, but for most of us. Linney had a bit of luck and kind of rode that luck, and you know, edges seemed to fly in gaps, but we also shot ourselves in the foot in terms of how we were in the field. So just one of those nights, really disappointing. But personally, it's nice to get a crack early and try and swing the ball around. But as always, I'd be hungry for more wickets. So hopefully in the last four games, I can contribute in that aspect and finish the tournament well.
No doubt you will. And that's probably been the story of the Renegades. Individuals have had good nights, but you just haven't been able to put it together as a collective. And a couple of individuals I want to talk about. Bo Webster clocking a good innings last night, but young Jake Fraser-McGurk, he looks 15, but he bats like a 32-year-old.
Yeah, he does. He's full of confidence. If you've heard him speak or been around him, he's not short of confidence. So I think he's going to have a pretty long career. He won't you know, if he's out of form, I don't think he'll ever think he really is. So that's a really good good thing for a young bloke to have. But, yeah, those two with the bat last night were the positive. And, you know, in these kind of situations as a team, there's always an opportunity for young guys to come in and, you know, try and change the momentum. And, you know, Fraser McGurk's done that last two games. So that's positive going forward for, you know, for Renegade, not for, you know, for everyone in the team, but also the fans watching to see a kid who could play for the next 15 years, really, come in and show he's good enough already. And then, you know, Mackenzie Harvey, Sam Harper, Peter Hatzoglou, there's, you know, they're all early 20s. So a lot of cricket ahead for those guys. And that's been the positive, I guess, in another disappointing season.
Kane, you've played 25 ODIs for Australia, 21 T20 internationals for Australia. What do you need to do and how close are you before you add to those numbers?
Well, hopefully I'm around the mark. I obviously missed the Indian series through, you know, on paternity leave. So,
okay.
You know, I'd assume I was a chance of playing a game there. So, yeah, there's a tour to New Zealand coming up in 2020 with 2020s. And I think the test team are away at the same time. So that should give some opportunities to fast bowlers who, you know, without Stark, Cummins, Hazelwood, those guys around. So, yeah, hopefully I'll be around the mark for that. But wait and see, I guess.
You look lean and fit. You haven't swapped over to your good mate Zampa's vegan diet, have you? You look actually like a whippet coming in nowadays.
Jimmy, I have been for 4 years, mate. Yeah. So almost five, actually. So, yeah, I think we did at the same time. Zampa's a little bit different build, obviously. He's a bit shorter.
Yeah,
I've been on the same one for about 5 years. So maybe that's what it is.
Are you a soy milk or have you swung over to the oat milk?
I actually went downstairs at the hotel here today looking for oat milk and they only had soy. So,
no.
You know, tough life, first world problems. But, first preference would be the oat milk, that's for sure.
No doubt.
And, Kane, where's the respect? 25 ODIs and 21 T20s. You're back at Adelaide. You're playing against the Strikers and they give you a send-off.
Give you the bird.
Where's the respect?
Yeah, I took them on, to be fair. Yeah. Usually most blokes would walk off there. But, I couldn't help myself, I think. It was one of those nights, again, where the frustrations were high and another disappointing night. And I just thought, you know, I'm going to stand up for myself here. So, I'm never short of a few words, and I definitely had a few when I got that wicket earlier. But there was nothing aggro in it. There was no swearing or anything. But I copped a bit on the way off, and yeah, I thought, yeah, I'll take him on. I always like it when blokes in footy do that. But it's disappointing when you're the bloke or you're the team losing. You look like a bit of a goose, but I thought I'd have a crack.
Well, we're still supporting you. We don't think you're looking like a goose. Just keep yourself nice, and let's hope that you're heading off to New Zealand pretty shortly. All the best, Kane, and congratulations on the birth of your baby as well.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
Kane Richo Richardson joining us here, Melbourne Renegades and Australian Quick. Time for our last break. After this, we're heading down to Torquay. Welcome back to Sports Day for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Jimmy, you're a man who spends a bit of time in the water, probably not as much as I do, but I've got great affinity with the water and, as you know, very frustrated with the amount of deaths that we see through ignorance and stupidity most of the time. But one of the great elements of surf lifesaving is the competitive outlet. And on the weekend, we've got the running and the swimming of the 60th Jim Wall Ironman competition at the Torquay Surf Lifesaving Club. And that may well be, from all reports, the longest running Ironman competition in the world. Joining us is one of the legends of the Torquay Surf Lifesaving Club in Tony Fraser. Great to have you on board, Tony. This is a big event. It's been going for a long time, and we look forward to another exciting hit out on the weekend.
Yeah, it's on tomorrow afternoon, Jared, and it's been going for 60 years this year. It's the first day of 1962. And it's interesting because what you said about surf lifesaving, and they're all pretty fit guys. And 5 years ago, they introduced the ladies in 2014. So there's 170 people going to be turning up tomorrow for it, different events as well. And so, unfortunately, because of the COVID situation, some of the Queensland guys and ladies won't be down there, but we've got two very strong competitors one competing for in the ladies event for Alexander Headlands, and she's a former Torquay girl called Grace Harris.
Yeah.
So she might be the favourite for the ladies. And the guy, Matt Gilling, who's from Burley Heads, he's hot favourite for the men's division.
Seems a bit unusual that we can fly 1,200 tennis players in, Tony, but we can't get a couple of lifesavers down from Queensland. But I'll leave all the politics to Jimmy Bartel.
No, not going near that, Tony. As I said, we'll park the last 18 months for COVID. What are numbers been like for, you know, Ironman competition in Victoria? Because I remember as a kid growing up, you flick on Channel 10, you got the Nutri-Grain or the Uncle Toby series, and you've got Hendy and Mercer and all these superstars. Yeah. What are the numbers like these days?
Well, it's a national sport almost, as you were saying, but the Torquay one's been going for 60 years, and a lot of those guys have been coming down over especially the last 10 years when there's been a lot more money involved with the prizes. But the interesting thing is the lady that's one of the hot favourites, Grace Harris. She's a former Torquay competitor, but she now competes for Alexander Headland on Queensland on the Sunshine Coast, and her family live at Torquay, so she's been down here all this time. And it's the same with a guy called Matt Gilling from Burley Heads, but he's got a family and spends a lot of time down in Torquay as well. And so yeah, it's open to the public, and it won't be a beach day, but you know, as I said, there'll be plenty of food and so on for sale on the beach, and it's got a great view at Torquay and the surf beach in front of the surf club and that whole area. So if you'd like to invite anyone along, and they can come. Just as a matter of interest, the Torquay Surf Lifesaving Club was started just after the Second World War by sportsmen, would you believe?
Mm-hmm.
Mainly from the Melbourne Swimming Club. And it's traditionally over the years, the Melbourne Swimming Club started in the 1890s, and their colours were royal blue and gold, and that's the colours of the Torquay Club. And interesting, on top of that, there's been 28 people that have been Olympians that have gone through the club over in that time, from footballers to swimmers to wrestlers to all sorts of sports. So it's you know, as I said, the club was started by sports people, and but the important thing is it's a life-saving club.
Well,
and the sports part of it is secondary.
My second cousin, Ted Wilde, is about 87 not out and still swims from head to head at Bondi every day. He tells me he's the most famous former member of the Torquay Life-Saving Club. I suspect he's got some competitors. Give us the most famous Torquay member ever.
The most famous Torquay ever was the bloke. The competitor was a bloke called. He played football for St Kilda. His name was Peter Bennett. He played full forward for St Kilda, full forward for Victoria. Went to two Olympic Games. So there's many of them. Michael Klim came as a junior in '96, and of course he won gold in 2000.
He's got to be up there.
Yeah, and one of the famous names, of course, is Dick Garrard Senior. He was in the first bronze squad at Torquay in 1946, and his son Dick Junior. He was Olympic representative in kayak paddling.
Okay.
Dick Garrard Senior went to four Olympics from 36 right up to 56.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you'd know, of course, you'd remember Keith Weigart. He played Fitzroy, and he played water polo and, you know, played footy for Fitzroy, and his younger brother, Leon Weigart. Leon went to two Olympic Games. So the names could go on. And this guy called, he's won 14 of these Jim Wall Ironman comps. And he's one of from the famous Strawn family in Geelong. His father, Tony Strawn, Tony went to the Commonwealth Games in 62 and came back with the world record in the 4x200 metre relay.
Tony,
his uncle played footy for Geelong.
Tony, for the weekend warriors, we've got a lot of them who listening to the show. What's the Ironman actually entail? Running, swimming, distance wise, so they can get out on the weekend. If they're not doing the Torquay Ironman, if they fancy heading down to the beach and go, I could have a crack at that, or I could train for that for next year.
Jim, the average person, it takes about 10 minutes per section. So say when they do draw the alleys, the swimming boys are closest to the shore.
How far are they out for people so they know?
Let's say a couple of hundred metres. Average about 10. The idea is it'd be 10 minutes per section.
Yep.
The boys are further out again, and the ski boys are further out again. So it depends on where the waves are breaking. At Torquay, it's usually a pretty even surf. So, you know, it'll take maybe half an hour. And then they finish up with a run up the beach and turn around, do a U-turn, and end up in front of the club. So. It's action going all the time, and there's an announcer telling everyone about it. And as I said, there's 170 people competing in the day in other events as well, junior events. So it'll be entertaining for the public.
Fantastic. Can you tell us, Tony, whether or not Torquay is still the best life-saving club in the area, or has all that government money that's gone into the Jan Juck Club maybe got hold of you?
No, we've... Our concrete building's still going. The old clubhouse burnt down in 1970, and the new one's, but this one's been going for 50 years. But we need a huge reno, and we need a new one as well. Anglesey have got a new one.
Yeah, Anglesey. I know Ingleby Dixon. He's raised a hell of a lot of money down there at Anglesey. But it's a great facility, and it's a great privilege that we all have in Victoria that on the Surf Coast. We've got so many great facilities, and if only people would try to focus their swimming who can't swim, who know nothing about the ocean in and around life-saving clubs, we wouldn't have the tragedies that we had during the week. Tony, great to have a chat to you. Let's hope we have a fantastic day tomorrow. There is going to be a little bit of swell around tomorrow, so it's going to be good viewing. And despite the fact the weather won't be at its absolute best, the water's pretty warm, about 18 degrees, so you can still get in and have a good dip.
And it'll be perfect weather to watch this event, Jared.
All the best, Tony, and great to have a chat. Tony Fraser there from the Torquay Lifesaving Club. Big event on there tomorrow. Get down early. Get yourself organised. I think Jake Nile's going down. He's a big ocean swimmer, Jake Nile.
Wouldn't have pictured it. No.
It's the only place in the world where Jake can't talk, and that is when he's swimming. Yes, more Sports Day coming up right after this. Welcome back to the program. This is Sports Day for Wilson Homes. They still believe in great design, so you still love being home. Earlier in the week, Jimmy and I caught up with Sydney coach John Longmire, and here's some of what the Sydney coach had to say.
Yeah, great. Great to be on you guys, and thanks for having me.
It's a very serious start to the season, John, because clearly everybody's, you know, got the struggles of 2020 behind them, and yet we still don't know what 2021 looks like. So getting a clean pre-season away is absolute paramount to success this year, I suspect, and it's probably no different to any other year.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, pre-season's, I guess, always important. There's no question about that. This adds a little bit more of importance in regards to, because it's the shortest pre-season we've ever had.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we started back with the 5-plus-yearers on the 6th of January, and whilst that's the first, we've only really completed the first week of pre-season with those guys, we're actually halfway through almost what a normal pre-season would look like. So it's just making sure that we understand that. Plus, we've also got to be aware of what's happening in the community, clearly, with you know, various border challenges and just the small adjustments we've made. But, you know, well, I think the whole industry and the whole community everywhere throughout Australia has been able to handle that pretty well in general when you consider what's going on throughout the world.
It'll be interesting to see what we learn and the way how players deal with this shorter pre-season, if you like. They've had a pretty significant rest. Whether or not, and I know there's two schools of thought, the Steve Hocking school is that you shut the place down, and the Paul Roos school that I know of, he's of the view that you get them back pretty much as quickly as possible. They're going to develop better under your guidance than left to their own devices. And I think probably most of the current day coaches, I won't speak for yourself, are of that view. And yet we may find that, you know, that giving them a mental break and time away from the club is beneficial as well.
I think there's always a balance to it, isn't there, Jared, with whatever it is. It's, and ultimately, What's always been the case in the past has been the most self-driven athletes are the ones that succeed.
Yep. And
that's always been the case. That will always be the case going forward too, and even more so now with the extra time off. And you know, the Josh Kennedy, we actually spoke to our players the other day, and it wouldn't matter whether myself was coach of Josh Kennedy or anybody else in Australia, he'd still be the player he would be. Those self-driven players, those ones that get up every day wanting to achieve and wanting to keep improving, are the ones that are going to succeed no matter how long the pre-season goes for. And this will be even more highlighted with a shorter one.
John, you speak to coaches and players around the competition and even athletes from other sports, that there's always an opportunity even in the crisis, and they've learned how to prepare and do things differently. The thing I liked about the Swans is you took the opportunity to move some guys around on the field. We saw Will Haywood go back and actually look okay across halfback, and Callum Mills on ball. Did you see that as potential for, you know, going to this season, or was that just purely the nature of last season?
Oh, there's probably a couple of reasons, Jimmy. I mean, the first one is that we saw last year as, first of all, when you get over the shock and of what happened to the game and some of the many people that we lost through that period in regards to the cutbacks, you sort of had to look back and say, what are we going to get out of this year? And one of the things we wanted to do and was keep introducing young players, but the next phase of that was keep having a look at them in different positions. And we wanted to clearly win. That's what we're about. And we would like to have won more games, but we wanted to keep playing some of the younger players and keep exposing some players in different positions and just see what comes out of it. Tommy McCartan went back. We did that a bit the year before as well. We finished that off at the back end of the year. That was strong. Will Haywood spent a bit of time back. We changed up a couple of different roles throughout the season just to have a look at them. And we think that's good for their development and good for the team's development.
Can I ask you, John, when do you start preparing players mentally for what may happen, or do you just not worry about it until it does happen? Because quite clearly, we may be going into another hub, God forbid, but the way this virus is going, anything could be around the corner, and it's already impacting quite clearly on AFLW.
Yeah, I guess it's no point. It's a fine balance, I guess, isn't it, between preparing them for what might be ahead, but also not spooking people either, and just understanding that, you know, it'll evolve, and it's very hard to predict what's going to happen in the future. We couldn't predict it last year, and we probably won't predict what much is going to happen this year, other than the fact that the whole community, governments, the AFL, clubs, are much more aware what we are this time going into the season than what we were this time last year. We're clearly more educated. And so, the governments are more educated, the clubs, the AFL. So what we did last year in response to what happened was twofold. One is because of the seriousness of it. Well, it was also because of we didn't know. Well, if it's not as serious and we know more of it, more about it, I think that stands us in good stead as an industry going forward.
John, Andrew Demetrio, I used to call them the phys edders, you know, the boffins, the sports science boffins. The change next season.
They love that, didn't they?
Yeah, they really enjoyed that one being called a phys edder after all the years they've put in.
He's going to be a regular on the program this year, Andrew Demetrio.
Good, he can talk about the phys edders and his love for them. But 90 interchange to 75, does it actually affect what you do game style-wise, or is it something you just, you know, work out as the year goes on?
Oh, we've done some modelling on it and obviously prepare for it. We try and prepare for it as much as we can, as all clubs do, I'm sure of that. But a bit of it's a bit about adjustment. Players will adjust, teams will adjust, clubs will adjust. It's something that we're mindful of going into a pre-season, but how much difference that makes, we've got some idea. We've, you know, clearly in some of the games we've played previously, we've got some idea of what that looks like, but how much of an effect that has over the course of the season, we'll wait and see. But we understand it, we look at it, but we don't get too focused on it. I mean, in the end, there's other things to focus on, and will we use that 75 interchange limit like every other team, and how much that impacts the game will still sit behind other things in the game, which is, you know, your skills and your development of that, and the way you kick and mark and defend and all of that type of thing. It'll still sit behind that.
How do you divvy up responsibility to an experienced coach like Don Pike, who's joined you?
Yeah, one thing we were really conscious of going into what was pretty severe cutbacks last year, and all clubs sort of 38% cuts to their departments, and we knew that what would happen coming out of that is that people with broader ranges of experiences and a gooder number of things would become even more valuable. And we just thought, you know, there's no broader range of experiences than being a head coach. And Don, I knew before he became a head coach, and obviously knew him as he was a head coach as well, and just thought that he could add a number of things to a number of different areas at our footy club, just through his history and a number of different roles that he's played in football and outside of football. So we looked at roles and what suited him, how we could get him into our club, and we felt what suited him and what suited us was a bit more strategic, looking at the opposition. We felt that that's a role that's we've got to be still mindful of going forward, even with four less coaches. And, you know, those coaches that we've got, our line coaches, have got a lot more players and a lot more responsibility going forward, and they have to really know their players. And so there's still a role for that person to look at the opposition, look at the strategy. That's still a role that needs to be fulfilled, and he can take a lot of that slack up and help the other players really, help the other coaches really look after their players and focus on their players.
Where's Buddy Franklin at?
He's running, and so he's been running a couple of times a week, and he had a really good session last Friday, had a good session again yesterday, but we're just building him up really slowly, getting him strong through the core. That's what we're about, making sure he's really strong through his hamstrings, his groins, spending time getting him adjusted to the loads that he's doing, but still working with him in the gym.
Had a fantastic draft, John. You know, and you get a ripping kid, but you picked up your zone selections, your academy kids, without having to cough up, you know, that first pick. You must be wrapped with what you came out of the draft with.
Yeah, Jimmy, I don't think there's many clubs that walk out of the draft and are disappointed at the time. Everyone's pretty happy. We were a pretty happy draft night to come out of it with Logan McDonald, who, you know, we consider to be a really good prospect as a key forward, something that we looked at in our list build, but also just where we rated him as a player that we were really after. Obviously, Braden Campbell has some fantastic speed and a beautiful kick, you know, some great attributes, and Errol Goulden is just a massive competitor and a natural footballer. So we're really pleased with what we got out of the national draft, and we think we've added some good youth to that talent that we've got, that young talent that we've got on our list already.
John, you would have been schooled for years and years, and you're now doing the schooling about not getting ahead of yourself. Dennis Pagan would have drilled that into you for years, I'm sure. But
I still wake up in cold
sweats. Oh, yes, yeah, David King tells me the same stories. But at the same time, as the head coach of a professional outfit, you have to have a one-year plan. You have a one-month plan, a one-year plan, and a three-year plan going on, and particularly when you're going down the youth build. Now, a lot of people have got you pushing up for the eight, and some have got you screamingly charging up the ladder into the eight. But when you sit around the board table and you're telling those people running the club what the strategy is and the longer-term plan is, give me the John Longmire three-year plan.
Well, it's less about the outcome and more about the process, surprisingly enough. It's you know, if I stand up and say, look, in 3 years, this is where we'll be, it's sort of, it takes the focus a little bit away from that process. And that process has been not just from now for the next 3 years, it's been over the last couple of years going forward. I mean, we last played finals a couple of years ago. We played in the grand final in 2016. We've had the retirements of some great players through that period, but we've been playing, a lot of young players, and those young players have been playing key roles for us every week. And that's been over the last couple of years, and that'll continue to happen. But, you know, we're looking for those players to keep improving and keep driving the standards of the footy club. And we're confident in that young group, but we still need to, you know, we're in situations this year to really to win more games. We need to make sure we take those opportunities with both hands. And so that's our next stage of development, is to make sure that we take those chances when we get them. And it's not easy because, you know, everyone's trying to do the same thing. But, you know, we're really confident in that group we've got coming forward.
There he is, the big horse, not committing himself to anything long-term, but clearly the pressure will be brought to bear if they don't play finals over the next 24 months. Don't forget, you can download the new Betfair app and get better odds faster on summer sport. Gamble responsibly, though. Call 1800 858 858. This is Sports Day for Wilson Homes. More coming up with Jimmy Bartel after this. You're listening to Sports Day for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. And earlier in the week, we had a great chat with Australian cricket legend, the great Alan Border. Here's our interview.
It has been. I suppose, you know, pressure gets to everyone, and Tim Payne's, you know, handled himself pretty well, apart from day five, which would have been very, very frustrating because, you know, our boys would have expected to wrap that game up and win comfortably, but it wasn't to be. You know, you've got to give credit to India, the way they hung in there. They played really well defensively. The pitch didn't break up as much as, you know, our boys would have expected and liked. So, yeah, just, you know, hats off to India. They did a great job in, you know, keeping us out there and did a great job in securing a draw.
Alan, Jimmy Bartel here. You touched on India's fantastic job. So do you put it down to the fact that this was, I know it was a draw, but India's result, or Australia just didn't do enough or didn't make changes? We know hindsight is perfect, but could have Australia done anything differently?
Oh, I could have done a few things better tactically, and the way that Tim used his bowlers. I probably would have used a bit more of the part-time of Manus Labuschagne and Steve Smith even bowling some spinners just to break it up a little bit. A couple of different, just technical sort of things. But overall, they tried just about everything and just couldn't quite get there. I mean, catches go down, but they're so vital in, you know, any game of cricket. But, just rams home how important they are at day five where catches go down and you just lose momentum as a result. And, hats off to India. They rode their luck well and deserved to get out of jail. So going into Brisbane, I think it's still even Stevens. You know, our guys had the better of that game in Sydney, but just couldn't finish it off in the end. But in saying that, India would be cock-a-hoop at the fact they didn't lose. So, it's even Stevens going into Brisbane.
Well, for that, do India have enough players to pick from? Boomer has now gone down with a side strain. Rishabh Pant, question mark. Vihari, he's out. Jadeja, he's out. Who's left?
Good question. I'm surprised by Pant. I mean, he bowled us all over the place yesterday. What's he not going to play? What's wrong with him? I suppose that's the problem. They've been on the road for a long time, the Indian players, and in that bubble sort of scenario. It must be hard to get out of bed every day and go play cricket maybe. But I'm sure they'll put a decent side on the paddock, that's for sure. They've got a lot of good cricketers, but yeah, to have a side without their superstars, you know, they could be found wanting. And I mean, we're in the same position. We've got a couple of guys, you know, under injury cloud. So it's going to be interesting to see who actually takes the field in this last game. But Australia play well up here, and I can't see anything different going into this game.
I was talking to Jimmy off-air before coming on. I haven't actually heard the Tim Payne press conference where he apologised. And we were trying to work out what he actually was apologising for. There were two elements. He had a crack at the umpire and threw in a couple of expletives, and then he had an exchange with Ashwin. Which do you think he should have apologised for, and what do you think he did apologise for?
Well, that's a good question, actually. I didn't hear a lot of the byplay out in the field and myself, but I suppose he just maybe he started to go cross the line to being a bit more personal than just being, you know, half smart with some of the comments you make. But and then swearing at umpires, well, I mean, that should happen more, I reckon. But that's one of those things in Australia. You know, boys being boys out in the middle of a sporting field, you drop magics that you wouldn't normally say in everyday conversation. But that's just, you know, pressure getting to them. Like it happens, you know, captains ride just every ball bowled and they want things to go their way. And when things are starting to go astray, you can sort of just blow a stack. It just, you know, goes against the grain sometimes, but that's the way it operates. So,
did you feel as if it demeaned the cricket team, though? Like, did it, one of the headlines was the return of the ugly Aussie. Was it at that level?
I don't think so. I must admit, I haven't, a bit like you, Jared, I haven't sort of actually heard what was said, or just a bit what I've read. And I don't know whether there's too much of a case to answer. Maybe he just came off the field feeling that he'd crossed a line that he you know, told himself that he wouldn't yep. cross with some of his conversation. So he decided to apologise. But, yeah, look, you can't get away with too much these days, can you, with, you know, 35 cameras and stump mics everywhere. It's a tough spot to sort of say the wrong thing.
On a positive note, Will Pekoski and Cam Green, I think the rest of Australia saw what all you guys in cricket circles have been raving about. I just got a question with Cam Green being the all-rounder, budding superstar he is. We've been searching one for ages, but yet he can bat, but we bowl him for four overs in an innings. Like, they don't bowl a lot. Do we desperate? He can get there in his batting, but just the all-rounder topic, do we desperately need one like we always ask for?
Well, it's a handy player to have. I mean, we've got by without it over the years at times, but it's very handy to have that guy who can, you know, belt runs that you'd like from a number six or five or six type player, and also, you know, bowl some handy medium pace and get people out. I haven't seen him take a wicket yet, so that's an interesting one. But we know he's got huge potential. He's one of those kids that he's had some stress fractures in his back, and they're just easing him back into the fray. But I think we mollycoddled our cricketers too much. I don't know what it's like in the football circles, but, you know, these cricketers, they're on easy workloads, put it that way. Four overs in a test match, I mean, you've got to be kidding me. You know, he's fit enough to do better than that, but they err on the side of caution all the time.
Did the selectors make a blue with Warner?
On the surface, maybe. I think if he's sort of 70-80% fit, he's probably good to go. Although he did start winching very early on that innings, didn't he? Mm. Almost the first run he took. It was obvious that he was in a bit of pain. Whereas if you watched him in some of the video, they showed him, you know, when he was in the nets, he was charging around, doing no problem. So it just shows the difference between nets and the actual real McCoy when you get out in the middle. So maybe, you know, they could have waited another week, but he's such a key guy to have out there. I think the fact that he hasn't played any cricket didn't help over the last month or so, and hopefully he's better for the run going into this game.
It's hard to know whether the calendar was due to COVID or whether it's just a new calendar, but it just highlighted the fact that we haven't got any long form of the game to fall back on.
Well, that's right. I mean, at the moment, you know, the guys are playing big bash, and it's a bit hard for national selectors to sort of pick someone out of that game to go and open the batting for Australia in a test match at the Gabba. I mean, it'd be a gutsy move to say throw Stoinis or someone like that in there to open the batting when all he's been doing is throwing the bat at everything against the white ball and playing cricket for 3 hours every, you know, 4 or 5 days. It's a pretty easy gig, the old Big Bash, I reckon. But, it's hard for selectors to pick someone out of that lot. So they've got to stick with, you know, the group they've got had in the bubble. And the only trouble with that is, you know, if you pick young Marcus Harris, well, he hasn't played a game of cricket for about a month or so.
Yeah, yep.
Probably even longer. So I don't know how he's expected to go out there and, you know, go crash, bam, wallop straight away.
AB never pulls a punch. Don't forget, though, folks, you can watch The Crown, a brand-new digital harness racing show, Thursday nights via the SEN app. Don't miss it. It's a good listen. More for Wilson Holmes coming up on the show shortly. Welcome back to Sports Today. Wilson Holmes is our great sponsor, and they still believe in great design, so you love being home. And earlier in the week, we had a chat with Carlton's young gun, one of the great young players in the competition. His name is Sam Walsh, and here is he talking to Jimmy and myself.
Okay, Jimmy and Jared. Yeah, thanks for having me, first of all. And Jimmy's looking after the ex-St. Joey's boys, so thanks for that, Jimmy. But yeah, it's good to be back into it. We obviously had a fair few inclusions through the trade and draft, so it's a pretty exciting time for those guys to get involved at the club. And it's been good to get stuck back into it with all the older boys after Christmas, so it's been good fun.
Started your career out on the wing. Are you looking to move a fair bit inside now?
Yeah, I think that's a transition that I want to take with my game. And the thing that I pride myself on is probably being a versatile player. So I'm happy to play various roles for the team. But I think a strength for us this year will be have plenty of guys that can go through different roles, and I think I can be one of them. And it's things that I'm working on to try and transition my game into more on ball time. So I'm continually working at that and see where that lands me.
How big a part of the footy factory is St. Joey's, the world-famous football factory? Because James Bartel is telling me that it's the most significant element of the Geelong footy factory.
Yeah, I think he's pretty spot on. There's been plenty of great footballers like Jimmy and Cameron Ling, and you can name plenty more that have come from Joey's. And it is a very good school with a great history, but it's something I'm very proud to be a part of. It's the sort of Joey's family, I guess it is. It's a great school and always looked after me and plenty of others. So I made some great mates there over the time and had some fun playing footy there as well.
Now, we had John Longmire on last night, Sam, and I was trying to get him to get on the front foot and give us his three-year plan, and he went with process. So that excuse has been utilised already this week. So you're not allowed to go with just following the process and the result will look after itself. But surely every Blues fan is entitled to believe that we're playing finals this year in 2021.
Yeah, I think you're right. I reckon the expectation for us will be finals football this year, but it does sound cliche and boring, but the process to get there, if you want to use that word.
No, there's no use of any excuses. We're playing finals this year.
No, yeah, that's outcome based, but at the moment we're willing to put in the work to get in that position. So that comes through. We want to play attacking and hard-nosed footy, and that's how we want to be known as a club, is really, really attacking and just play an exciting brand of footy that allows us to win games of footy, which ultimately leads to playing finals football.
Well, it sounds like, Sam, that the next step for you guys to play finals footy is your ball movement. Of course, you know, a couple of years ago, there was a lot of players behind the ball for Carlton. It was complete focus on stopping the opposition scoring, but you guys couldn't score much yourself. It sounds like David Teague and you guys are going to work on over summer is ball movement and hitting the scoreboard.
Yeah, absolutely, Jimmy. We want to be a physical team that moves the ball quick. So with the weapons that we've now got and the way we're training at the moment, I think that's been a big focus for us, is trying to play the game in our forward half and trying to move the ball quick to catch opposition off guard. And that's something that's been building nicely out of off-season. But also, defensively, if you put yourself in good positions, that allows you to attack and go at teams the other way. So it's a fine balance, but that's how we want to play our footy this year, and we're working towards that now, which will be good.
I imagine your ears are already ringing. You've intercepted the footy or won a free kick. Looping around the left-hand side is probably Adam Sard, and screaming for it on the right-hand side for a handball receive is Zach Williams. That must be pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's been great to have them around the club, and not only are they great footballers, but they're great people to have around as well. That's something we're pretty big on. But, yeah, Zachy Williams' ball use has just stood out at training, and Sardi's pace and everything we've seen from the highlights package has been there from day one. So they've added a great element to our group, along with some other draftees and boys that have been traded in. So really looking forward to hopefully playing alongside them throughout 2021.
Have you felt as if it's been a long off period, because a lot of guys have only just come back? Normally they come back before Christmas. Or have you felt it's been a short off season period because the season finished relatively late?
Yeah, I think for me personally, it has felt like a fairly long off season. Usually after we finish the season, we get about eight weeks off as young boys, but we got 11 weeks off this year. But we've always got a program to follow, which started to ramp up pretty heavily at that 8 week mark. So it feels like we've been getting a good solid work in, and now that we're back into it with a full group of training, it's definitely come around quick, for the fact that games are only about a month and a bit away, which is exciting, because every training session you're doing is with a fair bit of purpose, and it's pretty exciting for our group to have games around the corner.
Now, you've got a young ruckman. Some call him De Koning, others call him De Conning. I'll get you to clarify that. But if ever there was going to be a player that looked as if he could just take the competition by storm in his third or fourth year, he looks like one to me.
Yeah, he's a ripper, Tom De Koning. That's what I go with, but we all call him King. So kids are pretty short and simple.
Yep.
But he's a great player to play with, and he's a year older than me, so he's going into his fourth year. But we've seen him at the back end of last year really taking the game on, and his presence around the ground was definitely noticeable, and he's put in a huge body of work. So for him to get to be able to do that out on the park towards the end of last year, I think will give him great confidence heading into this year. And not only is he an unreal tap ruckman, but he was starting to clunk him around the ground, which is pretty valuable in this day and age. So he's one that I love playing with, and hopefully he can have a big year, which I'm sure he will.
Well, Jimmy, what a talent he is. If everybody can be as lucid and as forthright as this young man, Sam Walsh, and play as good a football, then the code is going to be in great shape going forward.
Yep, quality player, no second-year blues, and it's just onwards and upwards for him, and hopefully he's Carlton Football Club.
Well, I know that you've had a chat to Jake Nile off-air in the last 40 minutes, and you were
40
going...
40 minutes, that's a short one.
Yeah, it is a short one for Jake. You were going to rendezvous with him and have a swim down at the 60th running of the Jim Wall Long Ironman down at Torquay Surf Beach tomorrow. And can you let me know how many words that Jake can get in whilst swimming underwater? It's been great having your company this week. An interesting day on the Test arena. Probably honours were even, but another great century to Lava Shane. And Jim, the emergence of a young player for India.
Yep, debutant. Natarajan. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether how you pronounce the J on the end. I've heard different goes at it from different commentators, but he's got a couple of wickets on debut. Left armer, swung it a little bit. Got two wickets. Obviously, Lava Shane and Wade trying to pull him to the mid-wicket fence.
Yep. Well, he's got himself a couple of wickets on debut. That is a fantastic start by him. All set up for a big day, so enjoy your weekend of sport. Thanks for your company. We'll see you Monday.